Everybody ready? Come on, let's go. 3-4 show. Let's go. 3-4 show. Let's go. Yo, what's up? Welcome to my podcast. My name's Rick Thorne. On this episode, I'm going to be chatting with BMX photographer, legend photographer, Bill Batchelor. We're going to be talking about his new book called Concrete and Smog. It's a book of like unseen photos, BMX photos from the early days at Pipeline Skate Park, the scene of Southern California, the AFA contest, the King of Vert contest. Amazing book, amazing photographer. I'm going to give him a call right now. Let's do this. What up, dude?
Hey, nice to meet you.
Bill Batchelor. Finally, even though we met before years ago, but I don't remember meeting you.
We keep running into each other almost at the old school reunion. I see you in the background and then you never come by and say hi.
Dude, here's why. Because I go up there and like, I want to be like, oh, I'm going to stay up here for the weekend and do this. But then it's always something with the kids, man. Like, you know, lacrosse game, football practice, football game, something. So I just kind of pop in. Yeah, man, you know. So,
anyway. Yeah, this is my first fall. My youngest is at Fullerton going to college, and my other one's in Florida. So I'm technically an empty nester, even though I'm dead broke paying for it all. But it's kind of weird, you know, like kids are sort of grown up now. So all that stuff you're talking about, I've been there. I've done it. I miss it.
But it's crazy. Yeah, dude, it's crazy, right? You do miss it, right?
Yeah. No, you enjoy it while you can because it's fleeting and it goes, you know. They'll still be around, but the youth games, you know, the soccer, football, all that stuff, it goes quickly.
It does. I mean, my daughter's a junior in high school, but ever since they could walk, they were in sports, you know, or like jujitsu, on down the line, everything. So I know what you mean, dude. They don't tell you that stuff as a parent.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, hey, yo, you're going to have this detachment issue, bro. And you're going to be, people that are close to their kids, you know, you just feel like part of you is like, oh, what happened? So
yeah, totally.
It's a trip.
I'm trying to fix this light real quick. I'm in a guest house in the morning. It's too cold to sit outside. So,
oh yeah, I know it's freezing lately, or at least today. Speaking of kids and childhood, dude, you grew up in California, right? Obviously.
Upland. Yeah. Southern California, born and raised.
Dude, you grew up like you just happened to be in the best spot in the world when I was a kid looking in the magazines, like Upland. That meant Pipeline, right?
100%. Yeah, I was born there, 1971. Of rolling all the dice in your life, you know, that's probably for that time, if you're into skateboarding or BMX, that was the place to live. Extremely lucky to have been born there. And in fact, Baldy Pipe was right up the street from my house, my neighborhood. You know, as kids, we used to wander around there and get stuck and, you know, explore that whole area. We were too little to really do anything with it. But yeah, great place to grow up.
And, you know, Baldy is still like, you know, going. People still go up there and hit that quite a bit. You know, did you ever go there as a kid? Did you ever go into the pipe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So as little kids, we would kind of wander around up there and just explore because it's pretty rugged. You've been there, I think, right?
Yeah. Probably yeah. More rugged back then too, with less people and less houses and less everything, right?
Yeah, exactly. So then as we got older, yeah, we'd drag our skateboards in there or our bikes. And as you know, it was sort of an adventure just getting inside the pipe. And half the time you would get there and there'd be a bunch of surly teenage skaters with knives and bottles and didn't want little kids hanging around, or the sheriff would show up and kick you out. And
nothing's really changed. It's kind of the same, even to this day, like what, 30, 40 years later or whatever.
Yeah. Right? If anything, I'd say it's cleaner. I was looking at Salvo was up there last week and it's all cleaned over. It's cleaned up. It's like, where's all the gang tags and the broken glass?
Yeah. Where's all the fun? No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. So now, man, listen, the reason I hit you up, a number of reasons, but the number one reason also is to talk about like your history and your like a photography and like, you know, being a bike rider since I've been riding my whole life, dude. So like I grew up, but I was in the Midwest, so I didn't get to enjoy the California lifestyle that you had. And I always dreamed of that. So that's what led me to live in California and live here now. And so I look at your book and I look at all your photos and stuff, and it's like, no one captured like as much content like as you did, I don't think. from that time? I can't think of anyone else because you were there.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, I didn't realize how much I got. So, you know, I was born in Upland, loved BMX as far as I can remember. I mean, going back probably the late 70s as a kid, we all had BMX bikes. I raced in the early 80s. And then as freestyle kind of took off and Bob Harrow and the, you know, BMX Action Trick Team, all that stuff, it sort of took our interest over to that. And because I lived in Upland, the pipeline was happening. There's so much going on there between skating and BMX. I happened, you know, like a lot of kids, we were out jumping our bikes and doing stuff. And I picked up a camera and started taking pictures of my friends, just doing kid stuff. And eventually I brought the camera to the pipeline, and I was about 13 at this age, and just started documenting all the local kids riding the pipeline, which included Brian Blyther. You know, Mike Dominguez was basically a local. He's there all the time. Eddie Fiola. And started taking pictures of these guys. And then when the AFA started kicking off their contests, I created a little fanzine called Tricks and More in early 1984, which is, you know, started off as a little neighborhood magazine, and it was served as a depository for all my pictures. And so I started taking all these pictures, putting out, you know, coverage of these AFA contests. And within a few months, you know, I got noticed by John Carr from BMX Plus and said, hey, you know, you've got a little bit of talent. You know, maybe you can contribute some photos to our magazine. And it kind of took off from there. So I went from like neighborhood fanboy BMX fanatic to photographer behind the ropes at the AFA contests at the time, with full access to everybody. And I snapped thousands of pictures. And by the end of 85, I sort of bailed out of the whole scene and just put them in a box for 37 years and didn't think about it.
Wow.
Dug them all out and realized how much I actually had. And that's why we're here.
Well, you know, like what's crazy is okay, let me ask you this. What was the first year you went to Pipeline? Did you live in the neighborhood and then the skate park was built? You're like, oh, wow, what's this? Or was it like you were born and it was already there? Or like you just didn't know about it and you stumbled upon it? Like, or was it like a thing?
We knew about it. So we had my good friend and I, we had an older family associate named Spiff, who worked at the pipeline in the 70s. So it was built in 1977. He worked there from 77 to 79, and he was a skater. And he used to tell us stories about skating there all the time, and Baldy. And it kind of got our interest. And so about 1981, we started going there with our skateboards. And we still had the plastic boards, the cheap, you know, sort of early skateboards. And we were still kids, and the place is pretty intimidating. So we were always, the pipeline was always around and always in our life. And we would go there and skate and, you know, try that. Once about 1982, they started allowing bikes in there. So we switched over to bringing our bikes in the park. And that's when it all changed. And so I rode the park like a lot of kids did. I wasn't that great. So, you know, when I picked up a camera, that changed things. Pipeline was always there, you know. And so because of that, we were exposed pretty early on to, you know, Eddie Fiola and Ted Emmer and Paul Nolan and, you know, all these sort of early pioneers riding the park. And we got to see that.
And did you see their progression? Like, did you see, like, you know, Eddie could go 10 feet, but did you see him when he was learning how to go 10 feet? Or was your first thing like, wow, he's going 10 feet? You know what I mean? Like,
I couldn't really tell you. I probably saw the progression. You know, looking back, it always seemed like those guys were always ripping big air.
Right.
We did see the progression of the, you know, I was there probably at the first King of the Skate Parks at the pipeline. I don't have pictures of it, but I think it was 1982. I was at the 83. I have pictures of the 84. So this was the birth of vert freestyle in a lot of ways. I mean, people were riding quarter pipes and that sort of stuff, but between Pipeline, Del Mar, Whittier, Marina Skate Park, you know, vert was brand new back then.
Mm-hmm. It was. And did you ever see a guy there by the name of Jeff Watson riding around?
I probably did. I don't have any pictures. You know, obviously he really pioneered everything.
Yeah.
We saw him ride. I mean, it's what's weird. When I went back and did this book, I went through the BMX Plus archives and I'd find photos that they took for their magazine in the early 80s, like 82, 83. And I'm there in the background hanging on the fence watching. You know, I don't remember doing that, but it's clearly me hanging out watching this stuff going on. So I saw a lot of it. And it was just right place, right time, you know. And I mean, it's hard for people now to look back who know BMX now to really understand. And you were there. This was,
I was there, but I was through the magazines and I had limited access. I'd never been to California. So yeah, I was there because I rode, but I wasn't like as there as you, you know what I mean? You were like there.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, as a rider, you know how the sport evolved, and people don't realize that these things were just being created at that time. You know, it was, obviously guys are riding quarter pipes pretty early. And that was done, but the vert skate park riding was new. And then Flatland evolving along with that.
Yeah. Well, Flatland was bigger than everything at one time because, you know, you either had to order ramp plans, which I see you have in your book, which brought back a flashback. I'm like, oh my God, I ordered those and have a yard to build a ramp and then have the balls to ride it. So at that time, like California had all the skate parks. No one else has. I mean, maybe there might be some in Florida, but you had the East or West Coast in the middle. There was, wasn't much. And so I think a lot of kids rode Flatland, and that was the biggest thing at the time because there wasn't access to skate parks. Street wasn't popular. You know, people weren't building rafts, and then it slowly kind of started to evolve and shift. You know, things started to shift with the AFA and their contests and stuff. People started building quarter pipes and stuff like that. So I know what you mean about the Flatland. What was the scene like though? Like say it's like, I don't know, what was the hot night for BMX at Pipeline? Or was it every day, or was it certain nights, or what was it?
It seemed like it was all the time. So they added a BMX track in the early 80s, and I think they probably had races on either Saturday or Sunday, and they had them, I think, Thursday night. And if you entered the races on Thursdays, you could ride the park for free as well. It's kind of like a double pass. It's weeknights. So the Pipeline was open. They had good lights, so they were open till 9 or 10 every night. And I remember kind of anytime you'd show up, there'd be a couple of good dudes riding. They're always local kids. So a lot of people don't realize that the Pipeline is known for the pipe, the big bowl that's associated with that, and then the combi bowl. Excuse me. Behind that, there were like three or four little bowls that little for them at the time. That was like 9 foot, 10 foot bowls, but they were, kind of the beginner area. There were always kids back there riding bikes. It seemed like the action really picked up about 83 from what I remember. You know, it just, you'd show up and people were ripping all the time. But then again, there's only probably 10 people that could really get 8 or 9 foot airs in that park.
So, yeah, that's so compared to what I'm getting at is, the more things change, the more they stay the same in a way. And I don't mean it to sound this way, but like I go to some skate parks now, and there's nobody there. What I mean? Or like two people. I remember Santa Monica skate park used to be popping like a long time ago, and there'd be like, and there might be 20 people, and that was a lot. Like I guess what I'm asking you is, what was like a normal session vibe at Pipeline BMX wise? Was it 5 guys, 10 guys, 15 guys?
Maybe five. It was never crowded. I mean, if you look at some of my photos, there's days where we're there and there's no one in the park.
And see, that's crazy. It's 40, 50 years later. It's the same thing.
Yeah. That's there crazy. Might be one or two skaters in the background, and it never felt crowded. The skaters kind of kept to the combi, and we would take the pipe bowl or other spots, and everyone kind of had their space. And I mentioned it in the book, but the old parks were ringed by fencing. So each bowl had like a chain link fence around that bowl. And so you couldn't just pop out of one, drop into the next and move a line through the whole park. You were kind of stuck in your area. So kids would hang out in one area, then they'd kind of move around and go to the next. But a busy day there on a Saturday might be 10, 15 bikes and maybe 30 skaters. I have one photo in my book from, I think, 86, and it's the busiest I've ever seen. There's a 2-page spread, and it's a really scratched up picture.
What page is that?
It's about 2/3 into it. That's the busiest I've ever seen the park. It would be, hang on, we're going to bore your audience here.
No, it's all good, dude. This book is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, so the book sort of bad. Follows my progression. Let's see, it's page 336.
Okay.
And it's a double page spread.
I'm just sorry. And I've looked. Oh, okay. Yeah, I did see that photo. Okay. And that's the busiest you had seen the park for BMX ever.
For anything. I mean, it's packed that day. And
oh, you mean for anything, for skating, for anything?
Yeah, but I think even in that picture, there's a contest going on because you see kids sitting in the bleachers. But to your point, it barely survived. And, the skaters were pissed that they allowed bikes there, but the reason they allowed bikes was to keep the doors open, and it brought in additional revenue.
Which is weird to me because, you know, I know a lot of skaters, and I know a lot of old school skaters very, very well. And the crazy thing is all of them rode bikes.
Yeah.
Or not all of them, but a lot of them. And I'm like, wait a second here. Like, I mean, I rode a skateboard. I just wasn't good at it. So I was like, bikes just seem like the better thing for me to get out of the house, you know? So that's the thing that was always confusing to me is like, why are you hating on something you used to do? Like, is that I know so many people that skated that say they would ride their bike with their board to the skate park and then they would skate. And then it was just like, I don't know. I never really understood that division of like, because we were in such small numbers, how could we ever be a threat to any of you guys? Like, you guys have such larger numbers. You've always had larger numbers. Like, I don't know. I always thought it was kind of corny personally. But then, I'm at that photo. Got it. Go ahead. Sorry.
Skaters were cooler. You know, you have to admit punk rock, you know.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not beat up on skaters. I'm just trying to make a point that like there is, has always been in some areas, in some regions, some states, there's like, it's just different. Everywhere you go is different. Some people just don't like bikes at all. And I'm just like, well, I don't really care. I'm still going to ride, you know.
I think it's better now, but yeah, I agree. There's still, I mean, a lot of parks with bikes can't even go in there.
Right. But I'm saying, you're saying back then they were the same, you know, maybe some skaters were like, oh, we don't want these guys here. And then they were like, well, we need to keep it open. So we're gonna let these guys in. I get it. You know, it's all love. I'm not trying to make it a negative thing. I just think that like, you know, I'm just trying to express like, maybe if you'd like to do something, then, you know, I don't know, whatever, we'll move on.
Everyone was getting rad. I mean, that's the whole thing.
It's all good. It's all good. So that was like the busiest day. So like on a normal day, even skate and BMX wise, and I don't want to make it just about the park. I'm just kind of curious because I was always, you know, I guess in my own mind is like when I think about Pipeline and I think about those days and I see those contests and you see those people in the stands, when you're younger, you're like, this thing is huge. And this is the biggest thing in the world to me. And like, as a child, I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to be part of that. And then as time went on, I'm like, whoa, there was like 40 people there in the crowd. You know what I mean? And like, but at the time it seemed like it's so this massive thing. And that's what always stuck with me is that it was this massive scene. And I was just curious about that. I guess it was.
No, that's true. I mean, the magazines really amplified the scene to the world, and it seemed much bigger if you just only saw it through the magazines. And there's another photo I put in the book that I actually didn't take it, but it's of a King of the Skate Parks contest. It's early on, like 1984. I'll find it here. And almost the whole freestyle industry is there in the picture. And it's not a lot of people. It's like 200 people, and that includes everyone's parents. It's page 140. And it's a photo by John, who's a photo editor for BMX Plus. He let me use it. And I used it. I was in there shooting pictures. But
hey, on the subject, we'll stay on this, though. Do you remember Beeb, the photographer Beeb?
No.
No, okay.
Sorry.
Wait, so I'm sorry. So 140?
But it was just a small scene. I mean, freestyle, you know, in terms of it was really focused on Southern California, as you know. And until the AFA started putting on contests elsewhere, you know, England had a thing going on for sure, but
yeah, they did.
Freestyle scene was a small group, and that's where I feel really lucky. I was able to sort of get in the middle of that as a kid, basically, and become part of that scene.
Oh, but, you're saying, is it a double page spread?
Yeah, of the bull kind of looking down.
This one.
Yeah. So in that shot, you've got a who's who of BMX of the time, you know, company owners, riders, industry reps, photographers, and a few fans, and that's it, you know.
Wow, crazy. And that's, so was that the people in the crowd during those contests? Was industry people
a lot of it? Yeah, I mean, there were kids, but you think about how word got around back then, you know. Though I knew about the contest because they'd put flyers up at the Pipeline, but
right,
I think eventually they ran ads and freestyling or BMX action with the schedule for the year, but all it would say would be June 24th Venice. And, you know, you had to figure it out from there.
Right.
There's no internet, you couldn't post, something on Instagram and let people know about your contest. It just sort of word of mouth got around.
And that's why you did the zine, too, because zines are really popular back then. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like doing the zine because I Xeroxed them. I did put them out every month. And I would, let's say we'd have a contest in Huntington Beach. Well, I'd get my pictures, I'd write my coverage, and 2 weeks later, I'd have the zine out. And it took freestyling like 5 months to publish that same event. So I was always getting the scoop on, you know, sponsorship changes and injuries and all that crap. But so I, you know, as a 13-year-old, I took a lot of pride in that. That was cool.
Did you, and you rode as well, did you ever do like airs in the, and ride the park a lot, or did you get more in the beginning? Did you do that or, and then got more photography, or did you just do both the same?
As I started taking more and more pictures, I dropped the bike riding and I just used my bike to get around town. I was doing more flatland at that point. I rode pipeline quite a bit. I couldn't get past little baby airs and drop ins and that sort of stuff. I just didn't have it in me. So photography became a way I could become part of that scene still, or stay in there, but not be a rider. I mean, everyone else was just better than me, so I have no problem saying that. But I, you know, I was being a BMX nut. I mean, going all the way back, and I raced for a few years and did all that.
Right. Exactly. Oh, keep going. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, just saying BMX was definitely in my blood and I was obsessed with it. But once I realized that photography was probably more my talent than riding a bike, I dropped that. And I had
I totally understand it. Yeah. And I get it. I mean, even like today when I go shoot photos, dude, I take my GoPro and I do everything myself. And it's just like, it's so crazy because you think like back in the day, you needed a photographer, you needed to set up a shoot, you needed to like, you know, meet me here, where we're going to ride at, you know, it was more of a mission. It was a different kind of mission. And what I'm getting to is like, did you set up like different photo shoots with those guys, like Dominguez? Mm-hmm. And you probably became pretty good friends with all those guys, right?
Yeah. So early on, it was just happenstance. I happened to be there. They were there. I took pictures. Within a few months, let's say 6 months, I'd get their phone number and I'd be able to coordinate some sort of photo shoot. And there's some funny ones in the book where, you know, I'd get Martin Aparijo to meet me in Upland in a, like an abandoned parking lot and do his flatland routine. And I'd shoot pictures. How we coordinated all that stuff without cell phone, I don't know. You know, it just happened. I guess you leave a voicemail on their answering machine and
someone
would show up. So I did become close, you know, not buddies with all of them, but, you know, Blyther and them, they'd give me rides to places because I was underage. I couldn't get to contests. So I caught rides with them. Vanderspeck became a good friend.
Cool.
Up at his house up in Northern California. He'd stay at my house when he came to Upland. He was probably 7 years older than me, but I think he liked my sister too. So that was motivation and around me. I crashed at Andy Jenkins' apartment in Torrance one night before a Venice contest. So I got around and people helped me get to places.
Right.
But
what was the energy like with like, say, you know, because when I look back at the contest, like King of Skate Parks, there was always this kind of tension between Dominguez and Fiola. Was that just something that like the magazines created more, or the vibe created more, or the, you know what I mean? Like, was there ever like a, did they have tension ever riding, or was the vibe just chill and just dudes getting along riding?
Yeah, generally it was chill. I think when it came to contest time, there was a little tension between several people about who won the point system, whether, you know, there's always theories, whether it was rigged, this and that. You know, young
me. Oh, I never heard those ones. So people were saying that it was rigged, the contest was rigged.
Yeah, there's, you know, I'm not going to say anything because I think it was all fine. You know,
I'm not asking you to. I'm just saying I thought it was because people still say the same stuff today.
Yeah. So I think in general, everyone got along. You know, when money got involved and, you know, payouts for winning, it'd get a little more dicey. But when I went back and did this book, you know, I had really nothing that I found that was either embarrassing to anybody. Yeah, there you go. Nothing that people could be ashamed of. It was a good scene back then. People really had a time. They were pioneers. The memories are happy, I guess.
Good.
Definitely, you know, there was things I probably knew at the time that I don't remember now, like so-and-so doesn't like this person because they piss, you know, whatever. I've forgotten most of it.
It's just a bunch of childhood BS, probably. Just
exactly. Yeah.
Competitive crap.
If any of those people still have beefs now in their 50s, come on, let's move on. You guys were kids back then. I don't know if
they are. Dude, grow up, bro.
It generally was a good scene. And I think everyone was there because they loved riding bikes and they loved, you know, what was happening. And you know, if anything, like, because I was a kid, you know, at these early King of the Skate Parks contests, Bob Osborne and BMX Action had an exclusive to the coverage. So during practice time, I would get to go in there and take pictures, and John from BMX Plus. But when the actual events would start, we'd all get kicked out. So there was some tension there, not so much from me, but I think from some of the other magazines, because freestyling had sort of exclusives and all that. But that eventually changed. I remember that kind of stuff more than anything. You know, I remember
more of the politics with that type of magazine.
Yeah.
Sponsorship politics.
That kind of stuff. Yeah. But it, nothing dismal. You know, it was just what it is, just business.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's crazy, dude, to think that, like, you know, you just saw all these legends and you were part, I mean, you legend yourself, part of it. And just, you know, I grew up in Kansas City. My best friend to this day is Dennis McCoy, and Dennis actually drove out, and you were probably at that Venice contest in 85.
Mm-hmm.
He drove out and I didn't go with him. And he won all the pro class. Like, who's this dude? And he became like the first paid sponsored pro outside of California. And so that's how powerful your scene was to the world. Is like, everything was there. Everything met everything. You know what I mean? Anyone that rode, all eyes was on there and wanted to be there, you know? And
yeah, well, even
so, be there.
I remember Dennis came out a few months before that to, there was a Northern California AFA contest in Pleasanton, and he showed up, and I think that was the first time he was riding for Haro.
Yeah.
First time I met him, and his style was so different.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. His style was so different from everyone else. He was just very fast, a lot of energy, you know, and it sort of blew people away. And then, he showed up at Venice a few months later. At the same time, people like Mike Daly from the Plywood Hoods, they had come out. He stayed with me for that Venice contest. And when he went back, he told Kevin Jones about all these new tricks that were happening, you know, back in Pennsylvania. So that's how things got around, and say, oh, you got to see these tricks, because otherwise the magazines wouldn't report on it for 5 months. So, and you just had a bunch of, like, a series of photos. You didn't have video clips to learn how these tricks were done.
No, then they came out with that 101 Raddus tricks or something.
Yeah.
But you had to have a VHS player. Yeah, exactly. It was all different, bro, back then. I just remember Dennis. I grew up with Dennis, man. I met him in 82, and everything. Just seeing, you know, when your best friend becomes like the number one pro in the world, first guy outside of California, he's going to all these places that you dreamed of going. I'm just like a poor kid in Missouri, just getting by, dreaming, following the path. You know what I mean? So it's just a trip to, like, I wish that I would have been able to go to these classic skate parks, man. Man,
I think you just missed it, because you came out, what, in 88 or so? 89?
Yeah, something like that. Something like 85, I started competing in the AFAs. And then I didn't make it to California until 88. And that's where I think you sent me those photos that it might have been, was it 88 or 89 King of Vert, but it was 88 King of Vert, but it was in January of 89, I think. Is that right?
At Irvine, yeah. That was the last thing I shot BMX-wise. And I was already sort of in retirement for a few years when I came back and did that one.
You had sent me a photo, but also, too, my buddy Escamilla had sent me a couple of photos of me doing a can-can and a can-can X-up or something, and I think you had shot those, too. I'll send him.
Yeah, it's funny. Mike was one of the first people I ran into when I came down to BMX Plus to visit the archives, and he was in there as well, kind of helping preserve some of those photos. And I met him, and you can ask him. I had no idea who he was.
Cars, like, Mike's a legend. Ask me a rooftop. Yeah. You listen, rooftop's a legend.
Like, this is a rooftop. You know, he's well-known BMXer. I have no idea who you are. Really in hibernation for 30 something years, and sat in a box.
Hey, there's so many riders nowadays. People go, you know, so-and-so. And I'll be like, I don't know that dude. I know, I heard that guy. And they're like, dude, he's number one, but like this. Oh, my bad.
I mean, by the end of 85, I pretty much packed everything up and I just moved more into punk rock, and I was shooting photos of that sort of stuff and skating with my friends. I remember in the 90s, obviously the X Games and all that stuff, but I didn't really pay attention to it. Like, I think I remember, you know, your name, obviously, you know, Matt Hoffman blew up. Dennis was still there. Volker. You know, and then the new breed, the Miras and all that.
What did you think when you coming from, I mean, you guys had to know, like, this is back in the day when you were kids, like, this is new, or was this just like normal and you thought everyone around the world did this? and had a skate park, and did they, you know, or did you just think, or did you say, wow, we're, I guess you don't know as a kid sometimes, you're like, oh, we're really part of something new. What I'm asking is when you saw the X Games on TV, were you like, man, this shit's come a long ways?
Yeah, basically. I thought the, you know, the layout was weird, you know, the like the flatland street event courses with the wooden ramps stuff just didn't feel right. Cause I, you know, I grew up in skate parks and it just seemed strange. But at the time in the early 80s, when it was all going on, I think we didn't think what we were part of. It just was, you know, it was like your kid, this is what's cool, it's what we do. We love BMX. I think we didn't realize what impact that early freestyle scene would have with the later stuff. And yeah, watching the 90s things, I kind of watched it from afar. I didn't really pay attention. I don't know why. I was just into other stuff.
It's okay, though. I mean, you've contributed so much with this book and these photos and the memories for a lot of us and the new kids that really want to pay attention. I mean, the reality is, though, you know, people forget people all the time. And you know, people, younger kids are so focused on now, and they're part of something that's been shaped and molded to a degree. And in the early days, when you're on it, we all remember all of it because we were all growing with it. And, you know, so, you know, you've contributed so much. And that's why I respect you so much. And I always refer to you in a way of like, you know, I think of someone like Glennie Friedman that shot all these photos of skaters, but you never see one BMX photo. It's okay. I'm not saying there should be. Yeah. I'm just saying that I respect him, and he shot a lot of great stuff, a lot of great bands. You know, he was right in that world, that's what he was into. And that's amazing. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was refreshing to meet you and get your book, because I was like, man, I always thought, like, was there anybody back in the day that like shot all that stuff, you know, mm-hmm. or behind the scenes, or there had to be someone. And then here you are, you know, so you've contributed a lot more. Well, you know that you have, but I just want to tell you, you've contributed a lot to the sport. And it's Thank all you. Right there in your book. Where can someone get your book at?
Go on BillBachelorBMX.com. I've got a few copies left. Or if you go on my Instagram, BillBachelorBMX, there'll be a link there.
Concrete and small.
The last 120 copies. So if you want it, better grab it before the end of the year. I probably won't do a repress. It's been very successful. I'm very grateful that I was able to contribute something back to BMX. It gave me a lot of love when I was younger. It was part of my life. It was an incredible journey I had. And I'm glad I'm able to share this stuff back with everybody, because there's no reason for me to hoard it. You know, it's for everyone else.
It's awesome, dude. I mean, you've done a lot. I mean, you know, just being so, I respect you and what you've done for the sport. So, you know, and things change, you know, people move on, people get into other things, but I think there's always that part of you inside of your body, inside of your brain, inside of your soul. Once you start riding bikes, you get involved in the scene. It's something that is part of you that you can never take away. You know, that's a great thing about, like, I think all, you know, BMX, skate, moto, surf, whatever it is you do in our world, or even football or whatever sport you do, it's your sport. It's your thing. It's your connection to where you're like, you're always there, even if you're not there, you know what I mean? In your heart, you like got a place for it. So.
No, 100%. You know, I still listen to a ton of music. I still, you know, have a skateboard. I ride bikes a little bit. But coming back into this community after all these years, it was great to be welcomed back like I never left. You know, it feels like family, feels like home. So I never really left. I just took some time off, and I'm happy to be back. And
yeah. Doing stuff. Well, we got to set up a photo shoot, bro.
I keep telling you, you know, next time I'm down.
Where do you live at?
I'm in Northern California. So north of San Francisco a little bit. I've been up here for 30 years, but there's a bunch of half pipes up here. There's a pretty thriving.
Oh, dude, there's a scene up there. There's a lot of stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of.
In fact, bring Rooftop, because I think he said one of his old favorite skate parks is right here, about 10 minutes from my work.
You know, we need to take a road trip soon. That would be amazing. Absolutely. Yeah, we definitely should set up a photo shoot. Well, look, dude, you know, I like to keep this podcast short but sweet, because I feel like podcasts are going for 2 hours in my mind. I can't even watch 2 hour podcasts because I'm so all over the place, but I like to get a lot of stuff done. And I like to be short but sweet and get to the point. Is there anybody that you'd like to thank about this? Anybody, you know?
I thank all the writers back in the day gave me a chance, and they didn't just blow me off as some little kid with the camera. They let me take pictures of them, and they treated me with respect. I think that's huge. Even to this day, they still do. John Carr from BMX Plus gave me my first shot in the magazine. really sort of served as a mentor back then. And even today, he's been helpful with, he loaned me some pictures for this book.
Awesome. And
my family for putting up with it. It was a big project. It took a lot of time, but I'm really happy it's done. And I just thank the BMX community also for supporting it. You know, I got a lot of pre-orders, which made it feasible to do. It was a very expensive project, a very expensive book to print, but
a lot of pages in here, bro.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a lot. So
it was basically financed by the BMX community. So I thank all of those people, every one of you.
Yeah. Hell yeah, dude. And one more time, where could someone get this book?
So BillBachelorBMX.com. That's BATCHELOR. Or my Instagram, BillBachelorBMX. There's a link there and you can order it or send me a DM. I'll hook you up. I've got enough left probably to get through the rest of the year and then it'll be done.
Christmas is coming up too. So everyone out there, get this book. It's awesome. I think every BMXer should have this. I think every BMXer should know their roots, know where stuff comes from. That's where you get inspired as well. You know, so much inspiration comes from the past, the present, from everybody. So I respect you, dude. I thanks a lot for taking time to be on my show.
Thank you.
And hey, if I come up north, me and Rooftop will set up a photo shoot.
I'll let you know when I'm back down there.
And everybody out there, follow Bill on Instagram and like his photos, bro. Let's do this. All right, dude.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks a lot, man. Have a great day. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you.
All right, later, bro. Bye.
Yeah.